Did perimenopause or menopause catch you off guard? Weird symptoms appearing from nowhere, wondering who is this person who's inhabiting your body? And most of all, having no one to talk to about it? It happened to me too. And with all the chaos that it was causing me, I knew I had to figure it out. I dug in, reading often outdated books and searching obscure references on the internet. I learned how our shifting reproductive hormones mess with every cell in our bodies. And as I realized how complete this hormonal disruption was, I became determined to help other women understand and control their own menopause journey. Because menopause matters. And here, we talk about all things menopause. I'm your host, Jean Andrus, and this is Menopause Matters, the podcast. Hello, everybody. This is Jean Andrus, the menopause guru, and this is Menopause Matters, where we talk all things menopause. And today I have with me Tadra Payne, and Tadra is part of my passion project series, where we're talking about a project she picked up as a passion and a sort of a love of her life, not just the love of her life, but we're going to talk about her upcoming book, and she'll tell you more about it, and let's go. Tadra is a writer, filmmaker, and podcaster at 50 years old. She sold her possessions, gave up her apartment in Los Angeles, and traveled the world for 3 years with her then partner, who is now her husband. She's living in her happiest life stage and wants to encourage other midlife women to be open to adventures and love at every age. She's currently working on a book of real-life love stories for women 35 and beyond. She's also the host of the podcast Women Being Loved. Hello, Tadra. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So this project, this book of love stories, which is how we connected, as you were putting out a call for people with love stories, I answered and Tadra and I began talking.
Yes.
So tell me how this project started. What prompted you to go looking for 35 and older love stories and then to write a book about it?
Well, you know, it actually started because I was a bride last year and I'll be celebrating my 1 year wedding anniversary this coming Wednesday. And I had a very tiny wedding, little micro wedding, literally 7 people in person at in a garden, and then 100 people online from all over the world because my husband and I traveled the world together for 3 years as nomads. And so we developed a lot of friendships with people that, you know, we couldn't be like, hey, fly to America for a wedding. Like, you know, it just wasn't that.
Destination wedding, my backyard.
Exactly. And so we did this beautiful garden at sort of a spiritual center with a labyrinth and the whole thing. And it was very much us, you know. And I posted pictures online on Facebook, and it was really amazing. Like, we got the usual congratulations, of course, but we also got a lot of vulnerability from women who commented in the post. So with the pictures, I said, you know, basically, don't lose hope. Look at me. You know, it doesn't matter if you're not 30 or 40 or whatever, like, love can still find you. And it really hit a nerve, and women started saying, oh, I do have hope. I'm so excited. I'm looking for love. And other people said, you know, I used to be there, but I've given up. And so there was just so much vulnerability in the responses that I really didn't expect. And I started to kind of feel some of the hurt from some of the women. I'm an HSP, you know, highly sensitive person. There are times when I have to kind of block stuff because I feel so much. And I was just like, no, like, I just wanted to hug them. Like, no, don't give up. Don't give up. So I had this idea that I was going to write like a little pamphlet, like something that was my own story, right? Like the full story. Mm-hmm. Because where we see things on social media, we're only seeing highlights, right?
Right.
And people that have followed me and Paul, my husband, we've been together 15 years, which is, we were like, fine. And then one day we were like, eh, let's get married. So we got married. And so we got a lot of, wait, you guys weren't married? You know? No, we weren't. But people just kind of thought they knew our story. Like, oh, it's so glamorous. They're traveling the world together and they're doing all this stuff. And so there were these assumptions that weren't the full story. You know, yeah. We're not rich. Just to dispel that, we're not rich.
We're not rich. We did this the hardest. Easy.
But a lot of things that people thought, I was like, well, if I write this little pamphlet, it'll be encouraging because it'll be like, I've been married and divorced. You know, I've been really, really miserable. I've lost myself at times and had to really like find myself, find my authenticity, listen to my own voice versus, you know, a religious community that I used to be a part of when I knew for 8 years I needed to leave my marriage, but I felt kind of trapped, you know, and just a lot of things that I thought maybe other women will identify with these kinds of things if I write the whole thing out and I'm just open. I'm not like trying to create an Instagram rom-com story, right?
Right.
I was about to start that project. And one morning I woke up and I just heard so clearly inside, like, include other women's stories. And so I was just like, oh, that would be kind of cool. Because then if my story doesn't resonate with someone else as well, right? Mm-hmm. But then it felt like this huge project, like, where am I going to find these women? How many women? What am I doing? Right. And so I kind of just sort of let it percolate for a couple of days. And I said, well, let me just test it. See if anybody would even be willing to do this. Right. Because if I was going to tell my story in this deep, vulnerable, no holds barred way, I was going to have to ask other people to do that. And maybe they wouldn't. Because that takes a lot of trust, you know, and a lot of openness. And maybe they wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. So I reached out to people on Facebook, as you know. I reached out to some friends, texted, said, hey, do you guys know someone with really incredible love stories? Like, you know, that are the real deal. They can be married. They can be coupled. They can be gay. They can be lesbian, straight, whatever. Just as long as they have an amazing love story. And to my surprise, people started saying, yeah, I do, actually. You know, and even if it wasn't them, they knew someone. And so then, and this was over, as you know, between Christmas and, Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I was like, are people going to even have the time to do this right now? And I was just shocked at how many stories started to come in. I have about 42 hours of audio.
Wow, that's a lot of audio.
It is. But, you know, and because I said, you know, you can do this anonymously, first name only. We will change your husband's name so it's not really obvious. And you can be as honest as you want to be. This is a safe space. Oh, my goodness. The stories. I get chills just thinking about all the things that women shared in a very open and vulnerable way.
It's an incredible journey through these stories. I know that you and I talked through my story, which isn't that, well, somewhat atypical in that we met whitewater kayaking.
Yeah, I think that's really cool.
And, you know, I was divorced and not looking and just happened to fall into this relationship. And I think that as women, as we come into this time of our lives, I've talked about this on other podcasts, we kind of need to settle into ourselves and treating ourselves better.
Yes.
And that sometimes means that the old relationship isn't going to survive. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's not the right relationship for this time of our lives.
Absolutely.
And that's what I was interested in hearing as you were doing this. And dying to see the book. So get busy, girl.
I'm trying.
And I know when we originally scheduled this, we were hoping that that the book would be coming out fairly soon. Yeah, but I get that.
It was a lot more work than I anticipated.
So for you, those of you who think that your passion project is a book, guess what? It's more work than you think it is. And if you think your passion project is a podcast, guess what? It's also more than you thought it
absolutely.
Was.
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to ask you, if you paraphrase the most novel story that you heard from all these women.
Mm. You know what? I don't, because I asked really deep, intense questions, because mm-hmm. I wasn't just like, hey, tell me how you met and how you got engaged. And these aren't fluffy,
right,
you know, Hallmark stories. They're all really novel in their own ways. You know what I mean?
Cool.
Like, as women talked about everything from, we talked about family of origin, you know, what mm-hmm. did you see in your family of origin that said to you, this is what relationships have to be, and maybe that didn't work for you, you know, and mm-hmm. how did that play out in your life, in your first marriage? You know, we talk about what kinds of cultural and religious backgrounds they had that also played into who they chose and why, what they thought of themselves, what they thought they were worthy of and capable of, and what kind of love they deserved, you know? And so getting that down nitty gritty means that each story was incredibly novel because each person's experience,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
There were women who were at one point married to a woman, got divorced and then married a man. There were women that went the other way. There were people who were in polyamory communities who then decided to be monogamous and didn't at all anticipate that being a part of their life because they were happy in their community, but then met someone that was like, oh no, this works like this, you know? And just being open to different experiences, being open to examining who am I now and what do I need now?
And I think that's the big, big question of menopause. Who am I now? And what do I need now? Both,
Absolutely. Both
interpersonally and personally, because that is so, so much of, you know, I love the fact that you just took off and traveled the world for 3 years. That's pretty amazing. What was the most exciting, or where did you fall in love with? Where would you go back to live if you could?
Where would I go back to live? Okay.
So that could be three different questions now, couldn't it?
We have like our top three. And for me and my husband, two of them are the same and then one is not. But we really, really loved the culture of Finland. We loved that the Finnish government is just phenomenal. The Finnish culture and the way that they treat immigrants, mm-hmm. the way that they are very open and they're like, you're here now, you're Finnish, you know? And like, it's just like, you're one of us. There isn't all that BS you get, you know, in the US and other places and how people can be treated and othered. Not at all. Their focus on education and literacy and, you know, and living life fully, like not being all about chasing work and chasing the next dollar. That is not the Finnish culture. And so I just loved it. My husband's like, too cold. Don't even think about it. <You know?
laughs> Great place. Move it to the equator.
Right. Well, Finland was huge for me. I also love that they're quiet people. I like quiet. So it was really nice. The place that we both absolutely agree on is France. France has our heart. We have gone back and forth for the past 2 years being back in the States with saying that we'd like to apply for residency in France.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not 100% sure right now, but it's definitely a place that maybe if we ever retire, we would do. And my husband's in love with Spain. Spain's a little too loud for me. I love the food. I love visiting, but Spain feels like a party and it's a little much for my senses.
That's wonderful. It sounds like an amazing trip. And it sounds to me, now I could be wrong, that your love really evolved during this trip of yours.
Yes. If you know, they always say, if you want to test your love, take a road trip, make a 3-year nomadic trip.
Yeah. My story is a little different about our road trip.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was really beautiful. My husband had asked me to marry him years before, and I was divorced and I was kind of shell-shocked. I said yes, but then I said no. And then I was like, I don't know. I had to work through a lot of things. And on that trip, I feel like we both grew so much. You know, there was so much to discover about ourselves in unfamiliar places, about survival, about, you know, just learning what our strengths was, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we would also separate. So he would go to Prague for a month and I would go to Croatia or to London and then we would connect back up. And that was amazing because we had to be more resourceful alone than we were together.
Yeah.
And then we compared notes, you know, how did we grow? What did we do? And it was really cool.
That sounds really exciting.
It was. Okay. It was.
So back to these women that you talked with.
Mm-hmm.
What common themes? Okay, we did talk about who am I now and what do I need now? Were there common themes that you were seeing throughout the stories?
I think the overarching theme is redemption. And I don't mean that in a religious way at all. Okay. I mean personal redemption, like mm-hmm. redeeming myself, redeeming my own life, giving myself the blessing and grace to move beyond my mistakes, to move beyond things that were done to me, to just say, I'm going to open myself up to life again first, and then whatever life has. So love wasn't, like you said, I wasn't looking for it, right? Love wasn't this number one priority for most of these women. It would be nice, you know, they were obviously thinking it would be great to have someone, right? But they were in a stage where it was like, but I have me, you know, I have me. And two smaller themes was that of counseling and coaching. Almost every woman said she did some sort of therapy, whether it was, you know, mm-hmm. ongoing or she only had the money for a specific time, but almost all of them did therapy of some sort. One woman said that she was just too poor for that. She said, so she and her husband just got a whole bunch of books, like self-help books, and they would sit there and do them together because, and I love this, she said, because we are determined not to pass our shit down generationally. She's
Isn't
like,
that our, amazing?
Children, our children will not go through what we went through. And I was like, God, I love you people.
So, yeah, I think that what we... You know, you bring up something really super important, and that is that coaching is a way, counseling, therapy is a way to dispel what's gone before and to really step into the newness of this new relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's super, super helpful. I know I did therapy, but after we were married, for me, there was a lot of coaching going on because I was becoming my own coach for myself. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of personal growth in that time.
Yeah.
And it was super important. Mm-hmm. So if you're a woman that your original target was, this woman who's sitting here, she's 48, 51, 52, somewhere in there, maybe older. Mm-hmm. And she says, that's it. Life has passed me by. I'm just not destined to be in love. What would you tell her?
Well, I would tell her first off to buy the book, and that's not, or give her the book. Like, that's not really like because I'm saying, oh, I wrote this thing. I believe very much that when you see other people in a position that's similar to you, be it age or culture or whatever, and you see that they have what you are saying, it's not possible. If you're willing, it can expand what you believe is possible for yourself.
So true. Right?
And a lot of us don't have access to strangers to just go up to them and be like, hey, here are my 18 questions that are really deep and nosy about your life. Like I was able to do, you know what I mean? So it's just like when you work a job and nobody talks about their pay. You don't know what's going on over there versus what's going on here. When you can see it laid out for you and you're like, oh, this woman who's 60 years old just got engaged. Are you kidding me? You know, it does something. It creates a new level of hope. You know, I would say, and, you know, I was teasing by saying my book, but anything that exposes you to those kinds of stories, people, you know, maybe it's a live meetup where you go and there are women who are our ages who have love and who are happy, who are thriving. And if that's what you want, you get around that energy and it starts to change what you think is possible.
I think that's true beyond love. I think that's true for business and, you know, for women who are starting their own businesses and women who are moving through the job, through a career. Whatever happens to careers at this time of our lives where things are changing and morphing for us and getting around other women who are in that space that you want to be in can be incredibly powerful. Yes. Incredibly powerful.
I also want to say, and this is an unfortunate thing that I saw, I'd say about half, maybe even a little bit more, of the women have come out of domestic violence situations.
I was going to ask that.
Yes. And so some of the proceeds from the book, once it starts, it's finished and starts to sell, goes to an organization called No More. And so I'm partnering with them. I reached out to them already and we talked about how this is going to work. And their whole thing is helping women get out of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I had a couple of women say to me during the interviews, like, should I leave that part out, like about my past? And I was like, no, absolutely not. Unless you want to leave it out. You know what I mean? If you don't want to share it, that's fine. But if you want to share it, by all means, because a lot of women who have been in that situation have the mentality that I am now damaged or it's not worth trusting again or a whole bunch of things. Again, when you see women who come out and they are blissfully happy and they have found love that is not dangerous, it says that you can too.
Yeah. Wonderful, 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 wonderful idea. And I think there's another piece of that too, and that is knowing that you're not alone.
Absolutely.
I fortunately have never experienced that kind of domestic violence. But so many women have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably true. I say this over and over again. I don't know that I've ever met a woman who has not either dealt with domestic violence or assault from a stranger or molestation from a family member or sexual aggression or all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that ridiculous number that says 30%, and it's
much like, higher.
It's like, yeah, I don't know anybody who claims that anymore. I used to know two people, and they recanted. They realized that a situation that they had was much more, much less good than they played it out to be.
And right.
So that leads me to say that there are a lot of men out there that aren't trustworthy.
Oh, yeah.
But sure. One of the things that I love about your book is that you found that there are the good ones out there.
Absolutely. And one of the questions was, you know, how did you know he was the one or she in some cases? How did you make that leap to trust, you know, again, in mm-hmm. some cases, or first time in other cases? And what things does this person do that makes you feel loved? And not, you know, that he flies me to Paris for lunch, but daily stuff. You know, we will accept the trips to Paris. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but no problem with that. No problem with that. You got the tickets. I'm on, you know, I don't even need to pack. I'll go shopping in Paris.
But it's the everyday, like the everyday stuff. Like the example that I gave to each of them that to start the ball rolling, to think about, I said, my husband puts my towel in the dryer every night when I'm in the shower. So when I get out, my towel's hot.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
I love it because I'm always cold and he knows that. And so I was like, it could be the smallest things. And I got the most adorable, adorable things ever. But the women were like, this makes me feel loved and he knows it.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, there are some good guys out there for sure.
There's some good guys out there. And I mean, I think you know this. I married a man. When we married, we were 57 or so. Mm-hmm. And maybe not. Yeah. I'm trying to think. 56, 57, somewhere in there. Yes. And he was a lifelong bachelor. Mm-hmm. He had never been married. And mm-hmm. I was. And he had been in a couple of long-term relationships. Mm-hmm. But they hadn't worked for him.
Right.
And so, you know, there are these men out there that are, mm-hmm. maybe they've had a bad experience with a woman. Maybe mm-hmm. they're looking for you.
Right. And, you know, one of the podcast episodes that I did recently, I talked about that. Like, if you have all of these ideas of what it has to look like, you may be missing something really wonderful. And that doesn't mean lower your expectations. That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking That's about true. Expanding your expectations. You know, like for me, my husband's 8 years younger. I remember when I met him, I was like, oh, he's cute. You know?
That's funny.
You know, and we became friends because I was married and he was in a long-term relationship and we worked together. And then that was it. I just admired him because I thought, I love the way he treats his girlfriend, you know? And so I got to see how he treated his girlfriend, his sisters, his mom. And it didn't matter to me personally in any way because I wasn't thinking about him that way. But it was just nice to see a young man with his stuff together and doing it and treating women well. And you know what I mean? And then when like things sparked years later, I was like, oh,
this can be really fun.
I didn't respect this at all. But, you know, and on paper, it doesn't look like we have a lot in common. You know, like
Spain, Finland. Okay.
he's Irish and German. He grew up very differently than I did. And, you know, he's 8 years younger and just a lot of things. But we work so beautifully and he's so kind and loving and he's far more feminist than I am sometimes. You know, he's really challenged me on some things and taught me some things. So I was like, oh, okay, I never saw it that way, you know. Yeah. And maybe that's because he is younger, you know what I mean? But just be open.
So what can you tell us about when the book will be available and what's coming up on your podcast? I know you don't have a lot of specifics, but do you have a mailing list or anything that you're going to notify people?
Mm-hmm. People sign up on my website, which is womenbeingloved.com, there is a place to sign up and read some of the stories ahead of time. So there are 3 stories there. And so once you do that, you get on the mailing list. You can also help with picking out the cover of the book and all kinds of fun things once we're at that stage. There's also a space for sharing a love story if you're someone that wants to share it. The criteria is you had to have met the love of your life at 35 or later. Okay. I initially started out at 40, but a young woman sat me down and had a really like convincing conversation about how there's this inner space between 30 and 40 where you're watching all your friends get married and then you're watching them have children. And if you're 35 and nothing has happened yet, that you start to worry, especially if you want children. And she was like, you'll be missing that 5-year place in there where women are really like, what's happening for me? And so I was like, okay, good argument. So we brought it down a little bit to meeting at 35. But most of the women interviewed are definitely 40, 45, 50, 60. Some even found their love at 65. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Todras, thank you so much.
I'm sorry, you asked me when the book was coming out.
Oh, yeah. When is the book coming out?
I am aiming for the very beginning of June. I'm doing all of this myself. I'm trying to find a book designer and a proofreader and all of these things. So that's the target goal. I'm hoping to be able to do that.
Great. That is wonderful. So go out to womenbeingloved.com, sign up and find out when it's going to be available to you through, I'm assuming Amazon.
Yeah, probably Barnes. No, like all the booksellers.
Okay. And Todra, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your passion and this amazing book that you're doing. I can't wait to read it.
I know. I can't wait to finish it because I really think it's going to be a blessing for a lot of people.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And this has been Menopause Matters, where we talk all things menopause. Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please submit a rating and review and share it with a friend. Menopause has many annoying symptoms, but not many are worse than the lack of sleep. If you are one of the 90% of women who suffer from menopausal insomnia and/or fatigue, I'd love to offer you my free download, 5 Tips to Get Better Sleep Tonight. You can get it at menopausematterspodcast.com/sleep. And let me know which of these tips works best for you.